In the world of manufacturing, change is the only constant. How are small and medium-sized manufacturers, SMMs, to keep up with new technologies, regulations, and other important shifts, let alone leverage them to become leaders in their industries? Shifting Gears, a podcast from CMTC, highlights leaders from the modern world of manufacturing, from SMMs to consultants to industry experts. Each quarter, we go deep into topics pertinent to both operating a manufacturing firm and the industry as a whole. Join us to hear about the manufacturing sector's latest trends, groundbreaking technologies, and expert insights to help SMMs in California set themselves apart in this exciting modern world of innovation and change. I'm Greg Profesich, Director of Advanced Manufacturing Technologies at CMTC, and I'd like to welcome you. In this episode, I speak with three small and medium-sized California manufacturers who've had to pivot their businesses several times in significant ways in order to overcome the challenges presented by the COVID-19 pandemic. Susanna Almack, President of Almack Liners Incorporated and CEO at Stoneflowers Apparel. Meyer Bartour, Co-Founder and CEO of Optical Zonu. Barbara Wegg Glassman, Vice President of Administration and General Manager of Classic Cosmetics Incorporated. Susanna, Meyer, and Barbara talk about their experiences dealing with the health crisis as it evolved and how CMTC helped them through it. The group closes the discussion with some enlightening conversation about how their approach to planning for 2021 is different. Welcome. The first question for each of you to get the conversation started is about you and your company. Can you give us a brief overview of who you are and what your company does? Meyer, let's start with you.
Thank you, Greg. Optical Zonu exists for 17 years as an independent entity that designs and manufactures fiber optic communication equipment to customers like AT&T, SpaceX, Boeing, NASA, NSA, and T-Mobile and all the rest. So we are really high-tech in a very, very specific. We are doing all our manufacturing and design in Van Nuys. Majority of it's design, and a lot of it is in the fabrication. That's what we are.
Thank you, Meyer. Susanna, would you like to go next?
Sure. Almack Liners, Inc. We manufacture and we are involved with federal contracts. Everything is Berry Amendment, so that means that we manufacture everything in the United States. My contracts are mainly with the physical fitness uniform for the Army, Air Force, Marine, Navy. And we supply to Unicor Federal Prison Industries and or private sectors that they also have similar contracts. Stoneflowers Apparel is a woman's line that I own. So we also manufacture in the United States, and it gives us the diversify of being into the private sector and government contracts. We do all cut and sew in-house. We are located in Chatsworth, California, and that's pretty much it.
Thank you, Susanna. Barbara?
Yeah, thank you, Greg, for doing this. Classic Cosmetics is a contract manufacturer of cosmetics and personal care since 1988. We service both large global brands as well as direct-to-consumer and influencer brands. We offer full turnkey services, which includes packaging. We also have a variety of TPMs, third-party manufacturers globally, that we also offer as a service to our clients to bring in other items that we don't manufacture on site. We have over 100,000 square feet at our facility. We have both liquid and powder compounding departments and labs. We also do all the assembly on site.
Thank you, Barbara. Three very diverse, very different industries, different spaces, cosmetics, apparel, and telecommunications, fiber optics. So we should have some varied perspectives today as we talk through things. So let's get started. I'll throw it out to the group. How did the COVID-19 pandemic affect your industry?
The pandemic started hitting us in January because we have a supply chain that comes from China, and we could already track it down in China. In some of the preparation to the national holidays, you all know it was at the end of January, and that's basically when it's all shut down. So we were already trying to expedite things and anticipating a problem on that. So supply chain for us of component and some of the hardware that is not manufactured in the U.S. Is coming for us as component was the initial issue. The major impact on us came when the maybe conflicting or maybe coalescing stay-at-home order from the mayor and from the governor appeared in the same day with a lot of confusion. So the first step we took on our own to declare ourselves essential business And once we declared ourselves essential business, we acted like one. And we started getting letters from our customers demanding that we will be an essential business and demanding supply on time. So that's become basically comes from a self-fulfilling prophecy. But once we start operating, the issue was to train the people to get their awareness and to get consistent message and consistent information to the workforce. Because the confusion around us, what needs to be done, how it needs to be done, what can be done, what cannot be done, can you test temperature for people or the legal is not approved? All those ambiguities were of a real impact. The third wave of confusion was when government support started to flow in, and it was not clear exactly what do you want to get, how you want to get it, how you're going to get prepared for it, what do you need to do to get it, and how resilient are you not to let people go, because our customers, within a month, basically stopped ordering. The majority of the telecommunication segment that we serve, that we provide, is high-capacity arenas, sports, airport, convention centers, universities. All of those basically stopped operation. A lot of places, even if they want to install, they didn't have access for installation. So a lot of our orders dried up. So we have to kind of be more creative on our marketing and use new tools and trying to solicit the other market and reduce some of our costs without reducing the workforce such that we can stay afloat. We have multiple challenges. I still think there is a tremendous lack of clarity with respect to procedures, with really how to test people, when to test people, when to accept people. You know, the CDC is very ambiguous in its requirement. They say, we don't know or we think, and maybe it's like this or maybe it's like that. So we navigate our own way. We try to provide very clear message to our employee, but we have a daily executive meeting to deal with how do we operate today during the pandemic.
No shortage of challenges, Mayor, it sounds like.
No shortage of challenges.
And you kind of got the 1-2 punch, right? You got the early lull in demand and the early supply chain interruption in January before the U.S. shut down in March.
Correct. And on top of it, people that have placed orders, we start getting a lot of notifications. Are you delivering on time? Are you delivering on time? No, they wanted all the stuff that were ordered already to be delivered. So, I mean, we stood up to the challenge. We managed to do it. We do have an employee in Asia that takes care for our supply chain in Asia. And that employee was quarantined as well for a significant amount of time. So, I mean, we had a lot of balls in the air. But, you know, we did basically on every step we have to take the common sense and decide on our own because there is no established way. I must say that CMTC was extremely helpful, both as a sounding board, but also as a resource provider. So for me, it was very valuable anchor, nothing but to share frustration of saying what you're doing and bounce on ideas. So I must give very high marks because it was really productive and really useful.
Well, thank you, Mayor, for those comments. I appreciate that. Barbara, I think you also experienced a bit of a 1-2 punch, if I remember correctly. You want to talk about that? Everyone go next?
You're correct, Greg. And we had a very similar experience at Classic Cosmetics, as Mayor did. We started seeing the end of December and January, our clients' packaging not arriving from China. And we were sitting here waiting. No explanations were really given on the interruption of the supply chain. Then I do very much like everyone else remember the announcement that evening from Governor Newsom. I immediately got on the phone with our insurance company, two different attorneys, a labor attorney, our general attorney, our owner, our president, trying to determine if we were going to be laying off 150 people the next day, what we were going to be doing. We were able to determine that we were going to get into the hand sanitizer business and also declare ourselves an essential business. And that's what we did. Mm-hmm. Although we weren't making hand sanitizer for wide distribution, we were making it for ourselves internally and our local neighbors in the area that needed some also to use internally. So that was the first challenge, trying to determine if we were going to stay in business. Second challenge was from a staffing and production standpoint, and also from our sales standpoint. Our clients immediately, especially the global clients, that are tied to retail distribution outlets. When all the retail stores were closed, all the malls were closed, all your Nordstrom's, your Macy's, your Bloomingdale's, all those stores, immediately they put all their orders that were in the pipeline on hold. They did try to cancel some orders. But conversely, all our direct-to-consumer, a smaller portion of our business was some brands that are direct-to-consumer or influencer brands, and they did not have those retail distribution challenges. And as we've seen so far, online shopping, alcohol consumption, all these things have increased 500%. So while that segment of the business was doing really well, we had to figure out a way to pivot our business to attract those types of clients more. And we did that. We lowered our minimums. We lowered our development fees for getting in the lab so that we could attract some more of those smaller to medium-sized clients. From a personnel standpoint, it was difficult. You had a lot of people with a lot of, as Mayor also said, a lot of misinformation changing day to day. And then just from a physical manufacturing standpoint, we have a pretty big space here. The offices are definitely far apart, but on the production line, how do we keep the assembly line 6 feet apart? We were fortunate because the industry we were in, we already had about 6 months supply of PPE. We use as a daily on a daily basis. We follow FDA and CGMP standards for manufacturing. So we have gloves and masks and eye protection. But how do we keep people on the assembly line? How do we stay running with people 6 feet apart? It was a challenge, but we rose to the challenge. And we had a meeting today, as a matter of fact, and we're going to continue. Each obstacle that comes up, we will try to meet it. There's no other option. Failure is not an option.
Absolutely not. And a lot of pivoting and a lot of daily problems. It kind of sounds like that scene in The Martian where he's talking at the end about, you know, you've got 1,000 problems. You got to solve the one in front of you now. And then you solve tomorrow's problem tomorrow.
Yeah, here we call it whack-a-mole, if you know that game.
Absolutely.
So there used to be a little game where something pops up and you got to hit that one, another one pops up, you got to hit that one, and that's what we do.
Well, thank you, Barbara. Susanna, I think that you had a slightly different experience, not so much a 1-2 punch from China demand dropping down.
Correct.
But you've got a different set of challenges, if I understand correctly. You want to talk a little bit about how the COVID-19 pandemic has affected your industry?
Well, fortunately for us, because of the government federal contracts that we do, we were labeled under essential business from the get-go. So I didn't have a problem of, you know, having to shut down. That said, not all my employees were a part of essential business. So, you know, we have the Almacliners portion of employees that they cater to the government contracts. And then we have the other portion of employees to Stone Flowers apparel. So we had to lay off the non-essential workers, the people that did not qualify under, you know, the government contract. So that was hard, but, you know, we kept a fourth of the crew and, you know, trying to run the business with just a fourth of the people. And of course, on the Stone Flowers apparel side, we had all of the orders ready to ship and all of the stores, they had to shut down. And here we have merchandise like, you know, what do we do now? And boxes and boxes. Going back to the government sector and us being under essential business, you know, sounds great. However, most of the cut parts that we do here, they're shipped to federal prisons and they were hit badly with COVID because the factories at the federal prisons, they had to close immediately if one person had COVID. Mm-hmm. So all my government orders were pushed. We didn't have much work. We are just starting, and we're at the end of the year, to see orders coming and, you know, fulfilling the orders that they should have happened through the year. The private sector that caters to the government contracts, we don't see the merchandise here. It gets shipped directly from the mill in the South. So my employees, you know, they don't have anything to do with that. So that was a challenge. You know, what do we do? What do we do to bring the sewers back? You know, I've been in business for 30 years. My employees, they've been with me, most of them, 30, 25 years, 20 years. So letting them, you know, laying them off, it was like very hard thing for us to do. So we got involved with PPE equipment, face masks. Of course, you guys as CMTC been a big, big help into doing contact and liaison and, you know, the loss and what was happening and, you know, PPP funding and small business. And so that was great to have you guys as part of the team. So that let us bring the sewers back. And Stone Flowers Apparel started to do face masks also, you know, with the prints.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very challenging. We are working a lot. We are stressed to the max. We just go, okay, you're not just a cutter now. You're going to do and help us with this. Mm-hmm. Because what we found out is we can't get employees. So although I might want to hire more people, we don't get qualified. I mean, we don't get anyone to call. And regarding in my industry and the apparel industry, I do have to say the Made in American movement with mainly in the South, but the companies that they manufacture fabric and Hanes mainly, they pivot all their production to start producing face masks and start producing gowns. And it was such a huge movement. You know, I'm part of SIMS Association and like everyone, how they started to help each other. You know, we need fabric, we need masks, we need this, we need that. And how the Made in America movement moved to provide to the essential workers what they needed. It was like outstanding.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Susanna. I think that we've gotten a real good sense of the fact that all three of your industries were challenged in very unique and very unexpected ways. So it leads me to my next question. What issues and challenges did the pandemic expose in your business that weren't previously as obvious, but became obvious because of the way the pandemic unfolded? Barbara, do you want to start?
I can speak to one of the main issues was succession planning departments. Having backup for people who decided to stay at home, realizing that in some cases we only had one individual that held the key to the knowledge base in that particular department or area.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to do that. We were able to create a business continuity plan, which we really didn't have fleshed out, which is really important, not just for a pandemic, but for any kind of industry to know how you're going to face some kind of major issue. I feel fortunate that we have a great safety committee here who, with the HR leadership team, pulled together all the new SOPs, how to deal with an infectious disease program, which we put together. And we had all that in place when last week we received notification from CMTC, which has been invaluable. I mean, Kathy has really been such a beautiful source for all of us manufacturers here to rely upon. And we are also enjoying the Made in America logo, and we are sharing that with our clients to use as well. And that trend has also been really recognized, which I didn't realize was as strong with our global brands, but it is. So it really helped us clean up a lot of our departments and cross our T's and dot our I's in a lot of areas that we didn't realize. You know, you can have all the meetings you want about safety and your departments and training. But until you're actually faced with it, it's a completely different situation to see how you actually react.
Absolutely. Working from home, it presents no shortage of challenges. And having a portion of your business working from home when it's not what it wasn't previously is a big change for everybody. So lots of things in that list, though, that you talked through that I think are very relevant. And I think a lot of manufacturers are experiencing also. Susanna, you want to go next?
Sure.
What issues and challenges did the pandemic expose in your business that weren't previously as obvious?
The main challenge and issue and surprise was that COVID will affect the federal prisons factories. And the workflow that we will get stopped in a way. You know, you think, okay, you have these government contracts, you ship, you have orders, you have projections, but then all of that stopped. So that was something like, oh, okay, well, now what do we do? So we had to, you know, it was something that I never thought about. In 20 years that I have done government contract that, you know, it will hit to the end user, not the end user, but, you know, the manufacturer on that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Other things that was mainly, you know, the boutiques having to reopen for Stone Flowers Apparel, you know, all of that stuff. But mainly for us was, well, you know, we are planning of X amount of garments a month, and for, you know, our government contracts, that it wasn't happening. So that's, you know, just trying to keep afloat with the cash flow, with all the fabric that I had here. So it was a challenge on its own, you know, what, and it's, you know, production is going to come again fast and furious and play catch up.
Thank you, Susanna. It's a very unexpected thing, right?
Yes.
You know, the prison industry going into shutdown as quickly as they did in such drastic radical movements.
Yes.
Mayor, anything in your supply chain, in your experiences, that was the same?
We have not had to change much internally. We did put the plexiglass separation that kind of changed our workflow a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it was really minor tweaks. The biggest challenge was demand that is diminishing. You know, that there's not much more that we can do about it. And keeping the employee informed and functional. The one thing that we have done that we have not done before, and it was a glaring miss, even though it's a small miss, we did not have a phone tree, such that if we need to let people know at you know, the night before, if the company is open tomorrow because an employee received the positive, and now we have to freeze everything, and we need to do a contact tracing, who was in contact at what date, and then what is the criteria for coming back. All of those, the phone tree per se, was something that we have to invent and hone in relatively quick. The one thing that I found in the middle of the summer to be a challenge was to keep the employee alert. So we established a large screen data terminal in the front that everyone had to witness how many people died in Van Nuys and how many new cases we had yesterday in Van Nuys, trying to bring it home to the employees that they have to be careful not only at the factory, but also at home. Mm-hmm. Because the main emphasis that we had was, you know, whatever we do here is irrelevant if you don't do the same at home. Mm-hmm. And we are not going to police you, we're going to trust you. And the same way that you want to trust us, that we are doing the best for you and we're going to keep the workforce. The other element that was new to me during the pandemic is that people are moving to Texas. We lost two employees that relocated to Texas that have never happened before, kind of losing a burrito of that. But learning all of it does not help us much. And we cannot design for it. We cannot plan for it. We cannot do other things. Just need to react for it. So we are trying to stay resilient and use our phone tree as little as possible.
I think that really is the key there, Mayor. It's about pivoting, and it's about resilience, and it's about, like Barbara was talking about, playing whack-a-mole, right? Something pops up today we didn't expect. We have to knock it back down, and tomorrow will be something else new.
Yeah.
So I would guess that they're inside of those gray clouds or silver linings sometimes, though. So the next question for all three of you is, are there any competitive advantages that your business has that became clearer in light of the effects of the pandemic? Susanna, let's start with you.
With us, it was great because we manufacture everything in the United States. So A, the government contracts, and B, Stoneflowers apparel. You know, a lot of these small boutiques or large stores, they are counting from overseas deliveries that in a way stopped coming and they were very delayed. So once the stores open, we couldn't keep merchandise on the shelf. I mean, we were like shipping like crazy because they needed stuff and they needed quick. And so for us, it was a good thing that happened. And, you know, keeping it in United States show that doing it here is better. That's my point. But yeah. Yes. So that was, for us, was like a huge advantage. We didn't have to rely anything on overseas, and we had everything here, and we were able to produce, you know, better than a lot of our competition.
Okay. Thank you, Susanna. Mayor, how about if you go next? Any competitive advantages your business had that became clearer?
I mean, no, nothing became clear. If anything, stuff gets much milkier. If we can say that, you know, when the going gets tough, the tough gets going, we get tougher. So maybe we get some resilience and resilience training out of it, and a quick recruitment training in some of the positions that we have had. We did have some sales that coming out of the fact that we manufacture in Southern California and people can drive to us or get it locally.
Thank you, Mayor. Barbara, any competitive advantages your business had that became more clear, more obvious?
Yeah, that we have an amazing leadership team here. Cooperative, we were able to pivot. Quite frankly, our competitors, other contract manufacturers in this particular industry, closed down for 3 weeks to a month. The fact that we were able to the very next day declare ourselves an essential business and be part of that supply chain was vital. We received many new clients because of that. They couldn't get hold of their current contract manufacturers. So we did, that was a competitive advantage. And also the fact that no one client owns us. So we are not totally reliant on our global brands. They're a large part of our business. Their decline of 60-70% in sales hurt us, yes. But we had other clients that we can rely upon, our bread and butter clients that were going to be able to support us and help us with the cash flow in addition to the PPP. And also that as well, our financial team, being able to pull together all the paperwork, being first in line with our bank to be able to get that loan, which was key to keeping us operating. Well, I was really impressed with our team. We definitely have some great advantages here.
Thank you, Barbara. Sounds like some impressive work was done in a very short period of time.
It was.
So I think we've kind of touched on this, but I'll ask the question anyway to be a little more specific. What were the most important adjustments your business made in order to adapt to the pandemic reality? We've talked about a lot of them. What were the one or two most important? Barbara, why don't you go first?
Yeah, well, from our perspective, we've definitely stepped up our safety communication, our employee communication. We're touching everybody, every department, you know, every day. Managers are actively involved in checking in with them. And like Mayor said earlier, the key for us is making sure you are not going to get COVID here. You're going to come to work and you're going to be safe. But if you bring it here from the outside, you could shut a company down or shut a department down. And we've become very communal now because we have our bubble. And we all have to trust each other and trust that we're going to work together and be as diligent on the outside as we are inside. And like Mayor also said, it's fatiguing. It's absolutely fatiguing. And you have to, every day, we are communicating with them. It's going to be okay. By June of next year, it's going to be, you know, we're going to be on our road to some positive changes. But every single day, you have to remind, it's like every day is the first day.
Thank you, Barbara. Susanna, you want to go next?
We don't have the amount of employees that Barbara has or Mira has. So it was easier for us to say, okay, we are keeping our distance and, you know, be safe at home. Mm-hmm. For us, the biggest adjustment, like I said before, was to work with less people. So to work with a quarter of the crew, half of the crew. And then when the time came to hire new people to say, well, we are bringing outsiders. Do we want them? You know, it's like we have our own little bubble here. So it was a step into the plate where each of us been doing more than what we usually do. You know, whatever it takes to make the company go forward, we will do it. So that was mainly the adjustment, and so proud of everyone here that they stepped to the plate to do it.
Thank you, Susanna. It sounds like a very different set of challenges from based on size, but the same set of things you have to do based on the reality of the pandemic. Mayor?
I think we have made some fundamental changes that had to do initially with the fact that we were lucky to conduct a lot of Zoom meetings already before the pandemic internally in the company. So we had meetings because we have people in the East Coast as well, and we were doing Zoom calls or Ring Central calls all the time, but we were not participating the same with customers. What has happened is that because the travel stopped, international trade show stopped. And when international trade show stops, we cannot market and we cannot push our exports and we cannot do much with that. So we have relatively early pivoted towards a model of distributors representative in different locations. It was a following of a CMTC course on export. And using some of the support from trade.go and the experts there, we identify distributors in Singapore, in Italy, in Australia. We improved the relationship. We honed in on participating in virtual trade shows such that we can actually, at a lower cost, participate and get awareness of people abroad. And I think that those changes will stay. The big conferences, when you have a lot of people that you don't know and a lot of people that a lot of expenses, we can do it now with a significant cost saving. And we have invested heavily on that. I cannot say it paid off yet. We're still in quotation and we're still in different projects, but we do have a stream of leads that are coming our way from that, which is a positive change in a way because it changed the modality of doing business. We might have to fly less and to connect more.
It's a very interesting observation. I'm curious as to how much the world of telecommuting and Zoom and, you know, virtual meetings has impacted us and how much of it's going to remain after the pandemic. I mean, if we had a vaccine tomorrow and everybody could come out of their caves, if you will, how is it going to change? Do you think your business will change much, Mayor?
I think it's going to change. I mean, we were on that trajectory already. As I mentioned before, we were using this type of electronic meetings before the pandemic, simply because of the ability to screen share and the ability to work on documents jointly. It's much more effective. So to move it towards the customer domain, meaning to move it in such a way that we can interact with customers and we can support customers and we can do things remotely, will be much more prevalent. And I believe the trend will continue. I think that the tools are now widely available to everyone. So if previously people were more concerned about participating on our platform in a conference call, right now there will be less so. And we hope that we're using those tools will reach more people and that will have more impact in our sales and marketing department.
So technology can have some benefits. And the fact that we're all using those technologies, improving them, is something that we're going to find new ways to exploit now for competitive advantage, sounds like. Barbara, what are your thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, so I think we're going to have a mix. So on the client side, we're definitely going to hop on a plane as soon as we can and go visit our clients. Cosmetics is a very tactile kind of experience. And so we have to be in front of our clients. Mm-hmm. Doing it through Zoom and through the camera is okay, but it is a bit different. But on the supplier side, I've participated in many supplier trade shows, virtual trade shows, and I am loving it. Able to connect internationally on video chat with the client. I don't have to put up a booth. I don't have to go and travel. I don't have to stay in a hotel for the weekend to meet all potential suppliers. It was really convenient. And then on the intranet side for our team, we installed Microsoft Teams. So we try not to go from office to office or bog down our emails because we all get so many emails. I can quickly log on to Teams. We will continue to use that technology. And we'll continue to use Zoom for our suppliers. I really like that kind of meeting. But as soon as we're able, we're going to have to go see our clients. There's no way around it.
Understood. So varying impacts, exploiting it where we can, use it for cost savings and the same benefit. But shaking hands is never going to go away.
I don't think so.
Susanna, how about your sense of this virtual world, this virtual environment, doing things remotely? How is it going to impact the apparel industry and your company?
It's not feasible. We have to be hands-on. First of all, my employees cannot work remotely. Some of them, you know, if it's going to be just entering orders and all of that, yes, but
right.
We are manufacturing, same thing in the textile industry and the trade shows. Yeah, but we have conferences, you know, like every November, we have an army conference in New Jersey. DLA puts, you know, a big conference, it's like 1,000 people. They had it via Zoom this time. You can join and they told us what's coming and all of that. It's not the same.
Right.
You need to meet the people. You need to, it's totally different. And there is trade conferences that we do via the Association of Seams and speakers. And you in my industry, you can't. I mean, I know that my sales rep, for example, yeah, you can have like virtual showrooms that you're showing the garments and working with the clients. What we did for stone flowers, for example, we will send samples to the boutiques, a box of samples with a whole binder of, you know, the line sheet and samples of fabric. Mm-hmm. And then when they will get it, the, you know, our sales rep, Valerie, will work with them. You can do it to a point, but, you know, they need to come and see the whole collection. So we were able to fulfill orders that way and, you know, more clients that they are in Alaska, for example, that they couldn't travel at that time. But we have to be one-on-one.
Yeah. And a lot of manufacturers experience that same dynamic. We have a varied group here, and I just wanted to make sure we got all the different perspectives and understand all the different angles on it for our listeners. I think I have one last question for the group, and it's kind of a multi-part question. How are you looking at planning at 2021, given some of the uncertainty of the pandemic and the economy in general? Is it a business as usual approach, more conservative and risk averse, fewer capital investments, actively looking for cost efficiencies? What are those things, and how are you planning for that for 2021? Mayor, why not go first?
You know, it's the first year by which I don't trust forecast. So I did not even ask my salespeople to give me forecast because, you know, I've seen what happened to last year's forecast. And I don't think that next year, neither the recovery not going forward will be really productive. So basically what we do, we hunker down, we reduce expenditures. We are very, very careful in what we spend in R&D. We are trying to use the time to cost reduction to the in the places that we can. And basically, our plan is to monitor the progress on a quarterly basis and be ready for both, to be ready for success because we believe that it's going to recover. But by the same token, if it does not materialize, we'll have to take some drastic step to maybe reduce the workforce, to take the necessary cut in order to ensure the long-term stability. So we are really going into it almost kind of planning to improvise as we go because we don't have any fundamentals to rely upon.
I think planning to improvise is a great way to say it from the way you're describing that.
Yeah.
Very, very similar response. We are hunkering down. We're trying to be optimistic, but we're cautiously optimistic. Forecasting that doesn't exist anymore. We used to be able to roll up an 18-month forecast for our suppliers with our clients. That doesn't exist anymore. But through Q1 and Q2 of next year, we're going to be conserving cash, reducing expenses, holding on to whatever we have, and we're creating our wish list. As soon as we can let things loose, we are going to let things loose and buy equipment and give raises and bring back staff or whatever it is. But right now, we are in saving mode.
Well, thank you, Barbara. So continued uncertainty and more planning to improvise.
Yes.
It sounds like it. Susanna, anything different in the apparel world?
We are just taking one step at a time, being very cautious on inventory. It might cost us business because I might not have a print or fabric ready for Stone Flowers apparel, but we can't roll the dice and say, oh yeah, let's just get X amount of yards of this print and that print because we don't know what's going to happen. So we are just 1 week at a time, 1 month at a time. What's going to happen in January, we don't know. You know, just minimizing, offering less prints, offering less colors, just make our life easier.
Understood. So no shortage challenges.
Yeah. And the most important thing for myself and my employees and the people around me is your health. So, you know, when you put that in perspective, it's okay, you have to take care of what's the priorities and then worry about what's around it.
I do have one more question that kind of popped up into my mind. Each of you participated in some peer councils and some other things that's been facilitated by CMTC. What was your experience with the peer councils? Were they helpful in getting through and seeing other executives' perspectives and how they were pivoting and the challenges they had? Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I knew we were not alone in this. This is, you don't operate in a vacuum, but it nonetheless, it helps hearing that other people are going through what we're doing. And we don't have a phone tree. So I'm going to create a phone tree now just out of this conversation because we rely so heavily on email and technology. I do have our leadership team's numbers all in my phone, but I don't have supervisors or line leads, folks like that. And really, I was planning on coming here the next day after the closure and being standing at the door at 5 a.m. and telling people, come in, it's okay, we have a plan, let's talk. But we, you know, I learned something. So it's really important to participate in these peer groups.
Thank you, Barbara. Mayor, Susanna, any thoughts?
Yeah, it was useful to have in the time just to see what people are doing, because the biggest sense in the beginning of the pandemic is that we are missing something, or we don't know something, or maybe we are going all over the place. So by trying to basically say, okay, we give CMTC kind of a benchmark, that's how we're going to react. We don't have to look for elsewhere. Basically, it was a benchline. I'm very happy that over the years, CMTC have played a role in our company. I think the consistency enable someone like Kathleen to know us, such that she doesn't need to know who we are doing, what we are doing, what are the type of the issues that we are handling, what are the challenges, and such that the communication can be very fast, it's very efficient. So there is something in an ongoing peer group, so in ongoing maintaining of a relationship, because you don't have to reinvent yourself or to reinvent the presentation or who's the company about and what do you expect to get from other people.
One of the things that I have to say in all of the groups that I have participated through CMTC and, you know, other groups talking about the pandemic and what's going on, one thing that I want to reflect on, that because a lot of the people was working out of home and dealing with the kids and the Zoom classes and the spouses there, if you ask them how their life was or is, they all were having such an amazing experience working from home and a family life. So I think that all of this gave us a different perspective. I see it on all the different peer groups that I participated for being more united in what's important, that is family, and how people took the time to say, you know what, I'm going to make the best of this. And I'm going to make the best of the pandemic and being at home with the kids and doing the Zoom classes and being there and being present is priceless.
I couldn't agree more. There are ways to make lemonade out of the lemons, right?
Yes, totally.
A lot of us have found ways to do that. And even though that it is an unprecedented time of disruption and significant change, there also are some very positive things that can come from it.
Yes, yes.
Susanna, Mayor, Barbara, thank you for joining me today and for sharing your insights and experiences both with me and our listeners. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us with this conversation with Susanna Almack, Mayor Bartour, and Barbara Wegg-Glassman on the National Institutes of Standards and Technology National Emergency Assistance Program. Thank you. Stay safe and healthy.
Thank you for listening to Shifting Gears, a podcast from CMTC. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others and post it on your social media platforms. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcast directory. For more information on our topic, please visit www.cmtc.com/shiftinggears. CMTC is a private nonprofit organization that provides technical assistance, workforce development, and consulting services to small and medium-sized manufacturers throughout the state of California. CMTC's mission is to serve as a trusted advisor, providing solutions that increase the productivity and competitiveness of California's manufacturers. CMTC operates under a cooperative agreement for the state of California with the Hollings Manufacturing Extension Partnership Program, MEP, at the National Institutes of Standards and Technology within the Department of Commerce. For more information about CMTC, please visit www.cmtc.com. For more information about the MEP National Network, or to find your local MEP center, visit www.nist.gov/MEP.